Welcome to the Post Game Plan. I'm your host, Ali Samani, and this is the career development home for all current and former professional athletes. We're really excited today because we have one of the most probably interesting guests that we've had on the show thus far. His name is Tony Newsom. He is a former Utah State University student, as well as a Kansas City Chiefs linebacker, as well as a St. Louis Rams linebacker. And he finished his NFL career in 2006 and had one of the most interesting journeys that I've heard in quite some time. We're really excited to have him. I know that many of our guests are really going to enjoy this interview. Tony, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you, Ali.
Pre-interview, you know, you told me a little bit about some of the work that you've done thus far beyond your playing days. And I guess just to get it started, you know, you finished your career in 2006. Tell me a little bit about how your career, how you retired from the league and what you did to prepare, if you did anything, for post-retirement life.
Wow. You know, I was cut by the St. Louis Rams in 2006, came back home to Las Vegas, really had no idea what my next step was going to be. And, you know, my wife and I just purchased a home, and I looked at my wife and said, listen, you know, we really have to start doing some serious financial planning now and get ahead of the curve and really get liquid. So, you know, like the vast majority of the guys, we went out and, you know, and had a collection of lavish jewelry, you know, during several years of playing in the league and, you know, a few heavy pieces. And luckily I had a really dear friend of mine who was one of the top wholesalers in Las Vegas at the time. I took that jewelry to this guy, you know, and just wanted to get the jewelry tested or whatnot. And, you know, at the end of the day, unfortunately, 85% of that jewelry was fake. You know, it was...
Wow.
Yeah. It wasn't what it was meant to be. So, and wow. instead of making a couple hundred grand quickly, what I thought, you know, we were in a hole. But at the same time, my light went off, and I said, "Listen, if it happened to me, I'm sure it happened to a lot of guys out there." You know, it was a very reputable jeweler here in Las Vegas who serves a lot of athletes and celebrities, and still does at this point in time, for now. So, I asked my friend. I said, "Listen, you know, if this happened to me, I'm sure it happened to a lot of guys, and I just want to learn a little bit more about the jewelry business. You know, let me just hang around you for a bit and see what I can get out of this." So I moonlighted as his personal security for about a month.
Okay.
Until large trade shows out here in Vegas, and I kind of learned about the business over a certain course of time, and started wholesaling myself. And made a good business at a wholesaler just here in Vegas, and ended up traveling, going back to the Rams locker room, to Oakland, KC, and, you know, just wholesaling back to some of my former teammates, and it was pretty good, you know, until I had an old player ask me how do I know my phones were conflict-free, and, you know, I told him, so listen, just like another regular wholesaler or jeweler out on the streets, you know, I got a certification behind the stones, so GIA, EGL, AGS, that pretty much gives you the legal right of authority to sell those stones, stating that they are conflict-free.
Right.
So, yeah, I did a celebrity jewelry line for a good friend of mine, Ed Hartwell, who's Real Housewives of Atlanta. And once that was over, now that still kind of lingered in the back of my mind as far as, you know, if something would ever happen, any type of scandal, blow up behind the certifications, that trust that I was working so hard to build with my former teammates, it would be gone. You know, it would be gone at that point in time, and there would be no recovery from that just because, you know, once you cross your guys as being one of them, there's just, you can't bounce back from that.
Right. Your brand's on the line. Your brand's kind of your name, right, at that point, right?
Right. You know, a name was getting established, and, you know, guys started to know me as a private jeweler. You know, I was going to different events, meeting different guys in the league that just, you know, you play against these guys, but you really don't know them. You know, you shake hands on the field. We're used to butting heads two times, three times in the course of a season. You know, we may see you at a couple, you know, training sessions in the off season, but there really isn't any formal relationship unless you're on the team directly with them, you know, or you play with them in college.
Right.
So, you know, from there, eventually I got into the mining business. I became the first professional athlete to own and operate a diamond and gold mine in West Africa, based in Monrovia, Liberia. Have several concessions down there. I've been doing it for a couple years now. And, you know, it's been great. You know, it's been great. I employed the former child soldiers of this, for the Blood Diamond War from Sierra Leone and Liberia.
Wow.
You know, helping out the community. I'm actually a dual citizen. I have my citizenship in Liberia as well. I have a home in Liberia, a nonprofit in Liberia. So it's, you know, I love it down there in Africa. And I think it's a great place, and it's definitely a good place for business and a new opportunity.
Wow, what an interesting story. So, I mean, did you ever kind of have any role models throughout the course of your career or even post-retirement that kind of guided your way? I mean, from in the sports field, like that were, you know, former players, for example.
You know, it's funny you said that, because he'll say to this day that, he doesn't want to claim to help me doing this. I just told him about this about 6 months ago. Marcus Patton, former UCLA guy, he was an old head veteran for the Kansas City Chiefs, 13-year vet. He was the guy on the defense when I got to my rookie year. And just watching the way Marcus carried himself, he'll still deny it to this day, but I distinctly remember him having his financial team and his business partners flying in, and they would literally hold meetings at our locker room the day before, a couple of days before the game. They would come and debrief him about his business. And one thing he told me, he said, "Tone, listen, if you're not liquid enough to buy it, don't get it." He said, "Don't trust anyone with your money." He said, "You need to know everything a financial planner knows about your money. You need to know every avenue and everything about the business that you're going to think about you're getting in. It's as simple as that." So that always stuck with me. Other than that, in the sports arena, he was pretty much the only guy. You know, a lot of guys would kind of keep to themselves and, you know, what they were doing. And, you know, some guys would be noticeable, like a guy like, there was a corner that I played with in St. Louis. He was an old head, but he had a few car dealerships. And, you know, other than that, and guys going into the broadcast world, there really isn't that much guidance from an actual player perspective. My most influential person from a player development standpoint would be Lamont Winston. You know, okay. He's the godfather of player development in the league. He created the position, and he will always instill in you about us being our own enterprise and actually establishing in our business during our course of playing years. You know, so he just, you know, other than them, those two, that's a little bit about it.
Wow, I really like the advice of if you're not liquid enough, don't get it. You know, I think that's a key point because, I mean, as Americans, as you know, individuals that like to buy on credit, that's kind of the consistent theme, right? You buy on credit, you pay for it later. And I think that stays strong for professional athletes or, you know, individuals working a day-to-day job. And, I mean, that's an important piece of advice because if you don't have the financial wherewithal to get anything, then there's no point of actually making that investment. And I guess that's one of the main reasons why you kind of liquidated your assets, and that being gold. And, I mean, a great surprise at the time considering 80% of it was not authentic.
Very true. Very true. So, you know, it's been a wild journey. It's been a great journey. I left Africa and ended up in East Borneo, Indonesia. In East Borneo, Indonesia, pretty much, you know, a lot of what I do with my commodities company, I'm the guy who hits the ground running. You know, I scan the jungle, I search the jungle. I'm the guy that infiltrates and, you know, gets in with the tribes and seeing exactly what type of business can be done in these foreign lands. So I ended up in East Borneo. As far as EC can go, and I'd rather not say the name of the location, but I ended up staying with the last known cannibal tribe called the Dyak tribe.
Okay, wow. So this was, just a quick second, this was after your time in Liberia. You went there for a potential investment deal or a potential acquisition offer.
Correct. Okay. Initially, it was just a thing where, listen, we'll go down there, I'll purchase a couple parcels of rough diamonds, bring it back here, and it was supposed to be just a quick flip model, you know, a quick flip model that I thought would complement, you know, my luxury company that I had over here in the States. I said, listen, if I had a couple stones that I can cut and polish myself and sell it, that'd be great. Well, you know, the opportunity ended up being better than what I thought, and having an actual business down there, establishing an actual mining company in Liberia was just far more of a greater opportunity. And, you know, we went for it. You know, my partner and myself, we went for it, and we got it done. You know, we are we're a lucky few out of many Americans that tried to go down there. God bless us and stayed by our side. And, you know, now we've got a nice successful mining operation down there for both rough diamonds and gold.
So that's amazing and fantastic. This is a great story. Now, you kind of alluded to this trip to Indonesia. How did it go? And I mean, in our pre-interview, you kind of gave me a brief, and I'd love for my listeners to hear a little bit about that story, because I think it's unlike any other that I've heard.
Wow. I received an email from a dear friend of mine.
Okay.
His name is Andy. I'll keep him a little bit tucked away there. I'm not sure if he wants his full identity to be disclosed. But
okay.
His name is Andy. He's a very, very successful guy in the media industry. But he reached out to Indonesia, and through a family member, they sent me one of the largest rough diamonds in the world, a picture of it.
Okay.
I said, you know what? It's worth a shot. Let me just go down to this place, wherever it's at, and find out if this thing is real.
Okay. So you made plans with the individuals in Indonesia and set up an opportunity to meet with them. You had a place to stay. You knew you were meeting?
No. One of these things where, I mean, email communication was the worst as you can imagine in a rural place like that. It was the worst you can imagine. Through his sister's brother-in-law here in the States, I kind of got coordinates of where this place was at. So I contacted the nearest city on that island, which would be Balikpapan. So I got down there. Ended up getting a hold of the guys. I was staying at the hotel at that point in time. They came down from the village, which is about four hours up east, so they came down west. I had no idea who they were. Funny story, in that part of the country, they're not used to seeing African Americans.
Right.
So I knew who they were. I walked past them two or three different times. They didn't blink at me. They're looking at every other Australian, New Zealander, any other person, little black man just walking past them, like, this cannot be the guy who's talking about spending this amount of money down here. So I go up to these guys and introduce myself, and they literally look like they saw a ghost. We had breakfast together. Their English was, if I said little, that's a huge, a huge compliment. Their English is just not existent down there, period. It's just not happening. The English language is not something that they study. It's not something they want to study. This is a huge, huge, huge Muslim country, and they keep it that way, point
right.
blank, period. So we're using gestures. I'm going to the hotel front desk to have them write stuff down on a piece of paper to get to these gentlemen. So at the end of the day, I ended up jumping in the car, not knowing where I was going, not knowing if this was a trick, they're going to try to hold me hostage. I am in a Muslim country. Are they going to try to get some money for, some type of ransom? So you know what? I said a quick prayer, and I said, let's go. So we go. We drive 4 hours through the windiest roads, through the worst traffic, and the craziest jungle scenery. Remember, I'm fresh from Africa, so I think, and one of the toughest cities in all of Africa, because, they're still rebuilding from the Blood Diamond War, so I thought I'd seen some of the worst, but I was nowhere close to what was getting ready to happen. So we drive 4 hours up east, and I end up in this small countryside town. I'll tell you what it is. I end up in San Marina. So we go straight to the village, and I go in the village, see some of the craziest people I've ever seen in my life, and immediately, without any words, without any hesitation, they take out this 500-plus carat rough diamond, and we get to business.
Oh, my God. That's
so
quick.
To make a long story short, at the end of the day, with only discovering the 500-carat rough diamond, from discovering one of the most hidden, unknown treasures of World War II, I don't know, sir. When you know the story, I'm not sure if it's okay to tell it on air right now. But it ended up being some gold bullion bars, and we'll leave it at that right now. So trying to get that deal done, Ali, was crazy. I spent a long time, just under a year, living with this tribe. Became really, really friendly with the different families, even though I was hidden and tucked away, so the vast majority of the village wouldn't know I was there. And at the end of the day, I ended up running for my life. I ended up running for my life, and I got back here to the States. live to tell about it. This story has helped propel me to a different level. Since then, I've gotten my license, a license to manufacture and distribute specific jewelry on behalf of the NFL Players Association, which has given me the title as the preferred jeweler for the NFL Players Association, the first and only jeweler to ever do that. You know, it's a pretty given what a jeweler possesses and what he can do and the trust level that we must obtain and adhere to. You know, I believe that's definitely an accomplishment, and it's something good to say about those guys of the NFL Players Association trusting myself and my company.
Wow, man, that's a fantastic story. So right now, where does your business stand, and I guess where can people find you?
Well, I'm based out of my hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada, the live entertainment capital of the world. Where the business stands right now, we are in the infancy stage. We're just about to launch here in the next 60 days. You know, if you want to be able to find me, you know, just go to www.tonyproncompany.com or tpnco.com. The website will be up within the next 60 days. We have a huge marketing and advertising campaign coming out. I've served some of the biggest athletes in the business already privately. Now that we're getting ready to launch the company to the public, I've got a great team behind me. I've got a great sales team behind me, great marketing team, media, branding, and along with the NFLPA, the sky's the limit. You know, the first professional athlete to actually do this on a high level and on a legitimate level. So I'm excited, and I'm excited to come back and let everyone know that there's a trusted jeweler in this specific marketplace, and I'm here to service any and all your needs.
Wow, that's fantastic, man. This is an amazing story, first of all. And secondly, you know, as an individual that gets the opportunity to meet and speak with a lot of the players that, you know, post-retirement have seen how their careers have gone, I think this is a fantastic success story, and I wish you continued success. And before we kind of conclude here, I'd love to hear what pieces of advice you think, you know, would be best utilized for the current players in the league right now that are just about to transition, just about to, or even the ones that are currently entering the league and, you know, aspiring to get into that field, become a professional athlete. What would you suggest they do to prepare for life after retirement?
You know, immediately, don't put your life in someone else's hands. Don't count on your financial advisor. You know, take lessons from Terrell Owens, to be, you know, for example.
Right.
Look at what's happened to him for putting his life into the hands of his financial advisors or his business advisors or his investment advisors. Take it upon yourself. Don't stay in the bubble of the NFL or NBA or Major League Baseball, NHL, MLS, whatever sport that you're in. In an off season, during the season, take the time, go to networking events, reach out to people other than your teammates. Those teammates who are successful, quickly identify them and quickly friend them and ask them, get advice. If you want advice, call me. I'll give you advice. I'll give you references. Go to the NFLPA, go to the MLBPA, go to NHLPA, and find out from those guys who are the trusted sources, who can you reach out to and what are the proper investments to make. What to do and what not to do early in your career can either make you or break you for a lifetime. So you need to understand that quickly and knowingly.
Wow, good advice. And I was speaking to Morton Anderson, a kicker for the Atlanta Hawks, among many other teams, had a 25-year career. And he mentioned yeah, you know
him? Morton was an old head in Kansas City. I'll never forget this. My rookie year, Morton had been kicking longer than I've been alive.
That's true, man. You had a 25-year career. So, you know, he had told me that one of the things that he did, he had a Morton Anderson team. You know, a bunch of trusted sources in various fields that he could kind of count upon and refer back to at any given time. And it seems like you're kind of giving the same advice. And there's a continuing theme here that you got to find out who those trusted sources are and build strong relations with them and consider them as your kind of mentors, whether it's for the business world, the finance world, investing, even for playing, you know. And I think that's kind of the key message here. Am I wrong there?
No, very true. Okay. Very, very true.
Okay, man. Well, you know what? I really appreciate this interview. And once again, if you could just kind of give our listeners an idea of where they could find you, be it on Twitter or on your website. And, you know, this has been, once again, a fantastic interview, man.
Awesome. I definitely appreciate it, Ali. Guys, you can find me if you want to hit me up on Twitter. My Twitter name is Tony Pro. Tony Pro, hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, Tony Pro. And if you want to email or Google the website, www.tonyproandcompany.com, that'll be up soon. So right now, I guess the best way to get at me just would be Twitter. You know, just tweet me, Tony Pro.
Fantastic, man. You guys can find me at Ali Soma, AlySoma. And this has been the Post Game Plan with our guest today, Tony Newsom. And it's been a fantastic interview, Tony. Once again, thank you. And we'll catch you guys next time, next interview.